Welcome, everyone. Thank you all for joining us on this third Thursday call. It's April 19th, 2018, and this is Dr. Will Tuttle here in Northern California, where we are right now. And I'm so grateful to be able to share some time with you all, talking about what I think is the most critical and important and liberating and empowering subject matter that we can be discussing in our world today, which is the consequences of animal agriculture and the many benefits of understanding more deeply how we can transform our own lives and help contribute to the transformation of our society by questioning the official narrative in our culture that animals are just commodities to be used, and to take the spiritual path of mindfulness and conscious living, and to actually follow where that leads rather than merely going along with the cultural program, which is leading us into ever, I think, deeper problems if we continue to do that. So if you're on this call, you're already kind of on the same page. This call is only open to folks who are in the World Peace Diet Circle or have taken or are taking our World Peace Diet Mastery Program or Facilitator Training Program. And so it's great to have you with us. So much love and appreciation for each and every one of you. And feel free, as we're going along here today, this evening, to press *6 on your phone at any time if you want to say something, ask a question or tell a story or just report an experience or whatever it is, because this is not just time for me to share my thoughts, although it's happy to do that, but I'm really always appreciative of any questions, comments or concerns or victories or conundrums you may be entertaining or facing in your life right now, too, because if you are, there's probably many others of us who are also facing the same conundrums or questions or concerns. So I'm happy to address them, or we can also open it up and have each other address whatever questions may be coming up right now. So this is great. So basically, I'd like to begin our time together as we normally do, which is to just breathe for a minute together, because I think this vegan path is a path of introspection on one hand, of looking within, quieting the mind and connecting with our inner wisdom. And it's also a path, which I love, this is why I love it so much, it's also a path of absolute congruity in the outer world with our behaviors, and has to do with how we show up in the world, what we say, buy, speak, walk, do. So they're both intimately related to how we understand, actually, what veganism is. And I'll say, I've said it before, and I'm saying it more often lately, that even though I love the word vegan, you know, I also don't like the part about it that sets up a barrier very often, like, I'm a vegan, you're not a vegan, I'm different from you, and that kind of thing, because I don't think veganism is really veganism. It's ahimsa, maybe a better word, nonviolence, or yearning, or making an effort to act as nonviolently or as lovingly and caringly as we can for the brief time we're on this earth and as awake as we can be. I think it's really coming home to our hearts, to our true nature, and fulfilling our function rather than merely being part of the problem while we're here. So let's go ahead and take a moment to connect with our breathing and just give thanks wherever we happen to be. I know we're in many different places, different states, maybe even different countries. Many people will be listening to this later, to the recording. So if you're doing that, then we can take just a moment and give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have to connect more deeply with each other and with everyone who has been and is and will be making these same efforts in their lives to help bring more peace and freedom, harmony and joy and health and sustainability into the experience of human beings on this earth. We're so grateful to all the efforts of people, and that's how we ourselves, I think, can change in positive ways. It's really from each other. We learn and teach each other. And give thanks for all the non-human animals who are on this earth, some of them celebrating their lives and some of them imprisoned by human devices and suffering enormously under human domination and exploitation. So we send our love to them also and send our love to the whole web of life here on this beautiful planet, the infinitely intricate unfolding of life here that we're part of. May we understand it more deeply and understand also, as the great Buddhist teacher Thich Nhat Hanh emphasizes, that the only way to understand something is to love that something, that we will never really understand ourselves or our earth or our life without cultivating love for ourselves and our earth and our life and for others. So this is really what veganism is. I think essentially it's a practice of cultivating love and caring. So we give thanks for that. And I'd like to just read a little bit from the CD we have out called World Peace Meditations. There's one of the meditations, number 8, is the title, the theme of that meditation is Joy and Gratitude. So I'm not going to do the whole thing, it's a little bit too long, but I'll just do the beginning. And it goes like this. And this is usually, you know, with background music, so you can imagine the background music. This is something I composed. I was inspired to create this after a wilderness retreat a couple of years ago in Southern California. So this is Joy and Gratitude. When I enter into the core of my being, I enter into a joy that is so pure, so free, so utterly unconditioned and untamed that it is the eternal essence of what I am and of what all life is. This joy is boundless and permeates my being. It can never be attained because it was never lost. It is the ever-present truth of my being. I awaken to this joy, I remember. I allow the inner fears and walls to fall down. I relax and open the inner doors and windows, and like the dazzling sunshine, joy floods into my heart and my mind and my body, and the darkness is gone forever. It has always been shining within like the sun. And in my old delusion, I may have worked hard to keep it out, but now I no longer struggle and fight to maintain my position. I open to the inner knowing that what I am is not a thing, that what I am was never born and will never die, that what I am has no cravings, no fears, no addictions, no health challenges, no personal history, no faults, no status, no money, no possessions, no creed, no race, no gender, no name, no form at all. What I am is pure awareness, uncontaminated by social conditioning or by the efforts to impress other people. And I am free. So that is the beginning of that meditation. Thank you all for participating together in affirming the essential truth of our true nature, which is mudita, or joy that needs no reason in the outer world. And this joy is like a bubbling spring that very often is hidden for maybe days, weeks, months, or years, but it's, if we quiet our mind enough and listen and open, we will find, I think, all of us, this beautiful, bubbling spring of joy within us. And if we can allow this joy to be the instigator of our activism and advocacy and to propel us through our days, I think we can open also to the difficulties, the despair perhaps that we feel sometimes when we look out of our eyes and see the systems of exploitation and abuse that seem so heavy-handed, so pervasive and so relentless and so difficult to escape even for ourselves, much less for those beings who have less privilege than we have, hungry people and animals, of course, and people who are discriminated against for various reasons. There's so much that we can be grateful for, but also so much that we can do to help improve the situation, starting really with ourselves and the quality of our own consciousness, which is really what we have within our power to transform and to influence. It's our own consciousness, our own mind, our feelings, our heart, our awareness, and they can be always improved. I don't think there's ever any ultimate standing point of perfection. Perhaps Buddhahood is such a standing point, but even, at least in the Zen tradition, they say even the Buddhas are still practicing to get even more clarity and awareness. So I think that's what veganism is. It's the never-ending, in a sense, never accomplished, completed, or arrived at state. It's the continual striving to be more awake and loving and free and aware. And there is a deep joy in the actual journey. Veganism is a journey. It's not the destination. There is no destination. Any destination is actually an illusion. We're always growing and evolving and awakening. And I think that's the beautiful thing, actually, about what veganism is, because it goes really to the heart of our relationship with nature and with our society and with each other and with ourselves, to shine a light on a path of non-duality, essentially, of non-violence, but also non-duality in the sense that we realize that others and myself have the same source. And it would be like the fingers of my hand competing with each other when I'm trying to play the piano. You know, it's not going to work. We have to, they're springing out of the same hand. And they may think, my ring finger maybe looks over at my index finger and says, well, I'm a little taller than you are, you know. But actually, they all are perfect as they are. They're all unique, and they all have unique talents and abilities, and in cooperation and serving a higher purpose is where their joy and fulfillment arises and lies. And I think this is really true for us, that we, you know, we're raised in a society based on animal agriculture, which is based essentially on domination of the strong by the weak, and competition and exploitation and abuse of others and getting what we want for ourselves. And that gets very deeply into our mentality. So even if we go vegan, you know, even if we've been vegan for 35 years or like I have 38 years, it doesn't mean that our mind is always dwelling in harmony and peace. It just means that we've been able to set our foot on the path that leads to liberation, and we can be grateful for that. But I know I certainly have a long way to go, and the joy is in that, in the journey that we have in our life. So as vegans, I think we have a tremendous gift to give to the world. We are, in many ways, the spiritual teachers of our world today, if we are actively living a vegan life, even if we don't consider ourselves a spiritual teacher or a teacher of any kind. But just by being a vegan, you are actually a spiritual teacher, whether you realize it or not, because your life is an example of spirituality, of spiritual wisdom, of living a life not only concerned about, you know, the separate self that I think I am, to question materialism, because that's what veganism is at its core. It's questioning the delusion of materialism and that beings are just objects or things, pieces of matter that we're born and will die, pieces of meat. We see the being in the burger. That's what today, at the bottom, at the very end, if you've seen it already, of our resources for April 2018, it has a picture of a cow in a burger, and it says, When meat eaters look at a cow, they see a hamburger. When vegans look at a hamburger, they see a cow. I think that sums it up very beautifully, that we as vegans look deeply and look beyond the surface. We don't reduce beings to things. We expand things to beings. We expand and see the being in the thing. And I think this is something that we need to continually cultivate. And I really want to encourage everyone to make an effort in your language. I've noticed as many vegans do this, and I did it myself for quite a few years too. When we're talking about animals, we say it. And I think it's very important to just don't ever do that. Don't ever, ever, ever do that. Just train. We have to train ourselves to resist the temptation to ever refer to an animal as an it. And in our society, everybody does that. And you know, we say, oh, that goose is dirty, making a problem. And it's really a problem, you know. Or it, you know, we say it all the time, even for dogs and cats. And I think that reinforces these beings as objects. And even, you know, when I feel like we talk about a snake, we say she or he, or even if I talk about a mosquito biting, I usually say she just because it's mainly the female mosquitoes that are doing the biting, apparently, according to, I guess, what we know about mosquitoes. But I find it creates a sense of kinship to say he and she with animals, and also to remind other vegans, if they use the word it, to say, hey, you know what, I found it's really great when I use the word he or she instead of it in referring to another animal. I don't use it when I talk about a man or a woman walking around, and I don't say it goes, it's walking quickly. I say he is walking quickly. We don't say it is walking quickly. If we're talking about a horse, we say he or she, or if we're talking about any animal. So I think these, you know, changing our language is really critical on every level. And if it's awkward to use he or she, then just go to the plural. You know, that works really well, too. Just talk about animals and say they. And you can avoid it if for some reason it's awkward. But I think that's an important point. Another important point, too, I just want to raise. I don't know if it's that important, but to me it's a development in my thinking anyway. It has to do with the word cruelty and the word abuse. And I just want to say, I think in writing and in speaking with people, we often use the word cruelty when we talk about human treatment of animals. And I think it's a little bit problematic to use the word cruelty too much. I think it's good to just use it less, because most of the systems that are in place that abuse animals are actually, it's a systemic kind of violence. They're born into captivity, and they suffer enormously. You know, I don't have to tell you about that, the mutilations and the hyperconfinement and all of that. But in many ways, there are not any people involved that are cruel, in the sense, you know, because the definition of cruelty, you know, there's a motivation to cause pain. It's like, that's the motivation, I want to cause you pain. That's what cruelty is. And I think it's a little bit not totally accurate. In most cases, not always. I mean, there are certainly cases of people being deliberately cruel, and so that's fine if someone's deliberately being cruel. But very often, I think a better word is abuse or abusive, that animals are being abused, and that no one can argue with. People will argue, oh, we're not being cruel, it's, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I think, you know, no one can argue with abuse, that the animals are being abused. And I think that makes our position stronger when we use words very carefully and accurately to convey the precise meaning that we would like to convey. It not only helps in our communication, but I think it also helps in our thinking. We can think more deeply and more clearly about the issues if we're precise in our own thinking about what we're talking about. So that's, anyway, I want to tie that. And then the other thing that I'm just thinking of now as I'm speaking is just how we actually refer to these other beings. And a lot of people don't want to say animals, because when we say animals, that makes it sound like we're not an animal. They are. We're not. And we are. Obviously, we're mammals like they are. So then people say, well, let's use the word non-human animals. And that's okay, but that's also not that good either. I don't like non-human animals that much, because it defines them by that they're not us. You know, it's like they're non-human animals, and we're human animals, but it still puts humans as the sort of defining feature of other beings, which seems, you know, totally non-vegan thing to do. Plus, it's a mouthful, non-human animals. I mean, who wants to say that all the time? So I actually think just saying animals is fine. I mean, in the sense that we know what that means. And but we can use words like flesh instead of meat sometimes, you know, or secretions instead of milk, or, you know, things that maybe make it a little bit more clear. But I think we also have to be careful when we do that, because people may take it wrong. They may take it like we're being sarcastic or being overly harsh or explicit. So I'm always, when I'm giving lectures or talking to people, I'm always kind of trying to use my intuition to feel into which shade of meaning is best to convey in a situation. Not, you know, sometimes understating things, just saying milk and meat and, you know, cheese is actually more effective, because people aren't suddenly jarred by something where you don't want to jar them at that point. You want to jar them a little later, maybe, so you just kind of use the established lingo that people are used to. I think that can be, you know, that's, I think, an important point to realize, because we don't want to unnecessarily build barriers between ourselves and others. We want certainly to establish as much common ground as we can when we're speaking to people who are not vegan, and emphasize essentially our own journey, that what we've discovered ourselves or our own understanding, rather than trying to change them. And I noticed we were just in Southern California, and one of our members of the World Peace Diet community is Patricia Todd. She lives down in Southern California in the L.A. area, and she organized a couple of lectures. And she also came to our World Peace Diet training that we did in Ojai at Crotona Institute, which was really spectacularly beautiful, I mean, the place, and it went really well. I didn't think we were going to have such a huge crowd that we did end up having there for that. And it was, you know, 4 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, every morning from 10 to 12 in the classroom there. And we had 35 people, which I was really impressed. They were mostly local people from Ojai came, and a few others like Patricia and her husband, Manuel. And anyway, she wrote up a summary of my teachings, a few things, and one of the things she wrote up, and she sent it out to, she's a very inspiring person, because she's, after doing the World Peace Diet training, facilitated training, she decided to have a study group in Southern California, and they've been meeting every single week for over 3 years without missing a week, basically. I mean, every single week for over 3 years they've been meeting in Southern California and somewhere in L.A. there. So it was really neat to meet a lot of the people that are in her meeting, that it's based on the World Peace Diet, and they read the World Peace Diet, and they read articles that I've written, and then they have discussions and do other, projects and things. And one of the projects was setting up this lecture tour that Madeline and I just did down there. And it was wonderful to meet these beautiful people that are part of Patricia's, it's called Veg Help 101. But anyway, she wrote up a summary of some of the teachings and sent it out to everybody on her mailing list. And she just, for some reason, sent me a copy too, so I just saw it. And she was writing about the main, like sometimes I call it the elevator speech. If you only have like 1 minute to talk to someone about the benefits of veganism or something important you can say, that it has, I would say I think she didn't quite get it exactly right. She said there's three main points. I think there's really four. But anyway, the four main points are: number one, I'm so glad that I discovered that the only reason I was eating animal foods all those years was because I was just following orders. And then I realized that these orders are not in my best interest, so I'm not doing it anymore, and it's fantastic. So it's, those are the sort of main elements of it. I don't know how many there are, 3 or 4 or 5, depending how you divide it up. I'm really happy, first of all. I'll talk about that. I'm happy. I'm grateful. Make that the first thing you say, just because that's the foundational thing. We don't want to give people the idea that being vegan is some kind of, you know, difficult thing. We're unhappy being vegans, and it's everybody else is wrong and we're right. Just forget all that. Just emphasize, I'm so happy. I'm so grateful that I discovered that the only reason I was following orders is because I was eating meat and dairy products is because I was just following orders. So that really resonates at a deep level with people, because that's the only reason anyone eats animal foods. And then talk about how I discovered that these orders are not in my best interest. And that's an important point, too, because I think everyone understands that eating animal foods intuitively is not good for our health, for animals, for the environment, for hungry people. You know, we know that nowadays. People block it, but basically we do know it. So just, you know, emphasize that briefly, that I realize that it's not in my best interest, or you can even say it's not in my or anyone's best interest. And now I'm not doing it anymore. Okay, there it is. Boom. I'm not doing it anymore, and it's fantastic. It's kind of like the Four Noble Truths in Buddhism, in a sense. You know, there's the first noble truth, the second, third, fourth. The first noble truth in Buddhism is the existence of suffering. The second is the cause for the suffering. The third is there's a way to stop the suffering, right? There's a way to get rid of the cause of suffering. And the fourth is the path to relieve the suffering, the Eightfold Path. That's the Four Noble Truths. The whole, you know, millions and millions of people have pondered deeply, and it's very transformational. I think we've got kind of the Four Noble Truths of veganism here, essentially also, that the truth of suffering, which is in unquestioningly accepting the narrative of eating animal foods. You know, that's, bam, that's like causing suffering. And that's actually the cause of suffering. And then realizing that the next one is realizing that it's not in my best interest, aha, and then that there's a path away from that, which is no longer eating it anymore, and it's fantastic. So then that's the result. So it goes from the basic implication of suffering, eating animal foods, and we all know that on a basic level, we all suffer because of this, and that there's a path out of that, a path out of the suffering, and that we can all take it. And so we're an example of a being who is essentially doing our best to live the Four Noble Truths of veganism in our daily life. And when we do that, we become a practitioner, I think, in a deep sense, of a new type of dharma that's actually ancient, but it's relevant today. And I think that's the most important thing to realize, that this is something that's relevant for everyone, that everyone can contribute to this, and that this is really the pathway to a door into a future that's positive and bright for humanity. Right now, I think most of us feel like we don't see any pathways and any doorways that look too bright for our future, with global climate destabilization, with nuclear weapons proliferating, with more war, terrorism, and disease, and everything else, you know, filling the headlines. But to realize that there is a shining, beautiful pathway that is available to each one of us. It's our life, and we, each one of us can contribute to making a beautiful life. We're on this earth for just a few years, so to do our best to help bring this path to life, to bring it to life, to shine the light onto this path. And when we do that, I think we make it easier for other people to do the same thing, to shine the light on the path that's in their life as well. So I really appreciate, again, all of you in your efforts that you're making. I never doubt that any effort is lost. Some people think, oh, you know, I talked for half an hour to that person, and they're still eating meat. We think that we didn't make any difference. But really, I think we have to trust that every effort that we make, that we are planting seeds, and that we're trusting our intuition to do that, that each one of us has enormous capacities for wisdom and clarity, creativity, and that we can formulate our words. It's not so much really what we say. I mean, it is, you know, what we say is important, but much more important is how we say what we're saying, I think. You know, it's our tone of voice, our gestures, or eye contact or whatever it is, but it's how we say it. And at an even deeper level, it's who we are when we're saying it. It's the being that we are expressing, shining, radiating, embodying what veganism is. That's what communicates. That's what really communicates, is the presence that we have. And so don't ever doubt that as you make an effort to embody what veganism is, you are making a positive difference. People may not recognize it. They may say the opposite. They may say, oh, you're just really, you know, ridiculous what you're saying, and you're so judgmental, and you're, you know, you'd be much more skillful if you didn't say it that way. I've had a lot of people say, you know, people who are not vegans, right, they're telling me how I should bring, they say, you know, you'd be more effective. That hasn't happened lately that much, but it used to happen a lot when they say, you'd be much more effective if you weren't so confrontational, or blah, blah, blah. And I just don't ever listen to that. That's, you know, really, I mean, you can listen to it if you want to, but if the person themselves is not even vegan and they're telling you how you should bring the message to them, that happens quite a bit. People say, oh, you shouldn't do that. I mean, you just have to smile and say, okay. But actually, very often, what I've discovered is that maybe they didn't like the way I said it, but lo and behold, a few years later, they went vegan. So I think we have to, not believe people's feedback. Trust your own intuition. If you're coming on strong with someone, maybe that's really what they need. If you're being very gentle with someone, maybe that's actually the right thing. You know, you can be different for different people, different in different situations. Everything is situational. So that's part of the basic, I think, wisdom teachings of Asia. You know, the Buddha didn't lay down a whole, like, you have to do this, you have to do that. It's much more subtle. We have to feel into the appropriateness of the situation, but we don't, you know, it's clear we're not going to eat animal foods, but in terms of how we bring the subject, how we live our lives and so forth, I think we have to use our inner wisdom. And that's how we can create a movement, I feel, that's really powerful. It's not by telling everybody they have to hand out this pamphlet and they have to say it this way, and that marketing research shows that this is the most effective way, because marketing research is usually a bunch of baloney. They don't really, no one really knows and what's effective in the long run. So instead of trying to make a monolithic kind of movement based on quote-unquote effective advocacy and what works and what doesn't work, I think we are much better served by each one of us encouraging each other to awaken our own inner wisdom and use our own gifts and creativity in whatever way we feel is best, and support each other in that. And the best way to do that is to do it ourselves. So it's wonderful, I think, to we have our movement, the World Peace Diet sort of approach to this whole thing, because it's based really on individual connection. Each one of us is an individual connecting with our own wisdom and clarity through quieting our mind and trusting really ourselves and not anybody else. And I think that kind of a movement is unstoppable. We have a movement that is empowered without any leaders, you know, without any leaders, without any gurus, that we're each one of us are the guru. Then I think we have a movement that will essentially be unstoppable. All right. So thank you all for listening to my thoughts about these ideas. And there's quite a few things I wanted to cover today. There is someone who has his or her hand up, so I'm going to go ahead and unmute this person. It's area code 902, I think, from, is it Nova Scotia, perhaps? I'm not sure. Hello. Are you there?
Good day. Yes, good day. It's Kathleen. This is Dr. Kathleen Cavani in Truro, Nova Scotia.
Hi. Glad to have you with us.
I am delighted at the beautiful energy. Thank you for sharing and cultivating love and caring as you described the opening remarks and the ways that we can be community together and be agents of change. If I could request some time just to share a small success story and to make a request of this.
Absolutely.
Community.
Great.
So recently I had a piece. I'm a professor at the Faculty of Agriculture, and I know no others in a Faculty of Agriculture in Canada or in the U.S. who are working on vegan lifestyle, teaching about food systems. And so I teach food systems, and the science is compelling to me. We have got to change industrial agriculture. We cannot live on animals. So the arguments are just beautifully compelling, and I love how you just described how we could help people realize the joy of it. So I'm working on a book called Succulent Sustainability, helping people realize you don't have to give up to get a new way of life. You get so much out of this pathway. So I'm really hopeful that that will be published with a UK publisher. But the piece I wanted to share today was about a story that was in The Conversation, which is a platform helping the public read and access academic writing. As you know, it's not generally very easy to access or appreciate. So it's about plant-based living and helping people see the multi-dimensions of there's business opportunities if we change our diet. There are pathways to being kinder to the planet, as well as improving our own health. Of course, I had much more in there about treatment of animals that was edited out by the time it got finally published. But I'm not discouraged, because there's other ways we can continue to raise the awareness. So my request to the team, too, is if we see stories like that and share them with each other, that's really one of the calls to action. But also, if there are any others, particularly in Canada on the call, that might be interested in having a scholarly community around vegan lifestyle and teaching around plant-based, I would be delighted to hear from anybody as well.
Great. All right. Yes, thank you so much. What I will do, I already noticed your article right before the call when I was looking around, and I saw you posted a link to it on the World Peace Diet Facilitators Facebook group, and I looked at the article, How to Make Global Food Systems More Sustainable. And you start out talking about how James Cameron and his wife have launched an organic pea protein operation in Saskatchewan, which will be the top producer of organic pea protein in North America. And then you go on from there to talk about the many benefits of shifting over to plant-based agriculture, that's really the only way we have a sustainable future. Mm-hmm. And I really, applaud you for bringing this message. It's kind of like you're David and, Daniel in the lion's den, or I don't know what. you're the only one in the, as you said, I was amazed to hear that, the only one you know of on the faculty of agriculture who's promoting veganism. Isn't that amazing? I can definitely understand that, because everywhere we go in the States, on any land-grant university or any university that's a Department of Agriculture, there's always a dairy and a meat, all kinds of swine, poultry, everything else.
Right.
And that's the main thing that people are promoting, and that's where all the money is, where all the research is, where all the funding is. Mm-hmm. And it's also, absolutely destroying most of our possibilities for a healthy world. So good for you. I think I'll go ahead and I'll put a link. I've already got the link for your article in the May resources, but I'll put a link in the email that I send out tomorrow morning or tonight after the call is over, just if people want to see it right away. Or they can just go, if you're on Facebook, go to the Facebook, World Peace Diet Facebook group, and you can read Kathleen's article. And I think it's a great idea, to also, what you said, to have a community of people who want to have a more academic discussion, perhaps about ways to move all this forward, because we need people on every level working this way. And I like what you said, too, about there's the investment of opportunities or other opportunities to actually, not only be a volunteer helping to bring the vegan message to the world, but also in some way be compensated for it, for your efforts and time. And people are finding ways of doing that in many different ways, and so that's always something to emphasize as well. And I want to thank you for these efforts, because I think it's courageous, and I'm sorry to hear that they cut out a lot of the best part, probably. But
well, and I plan to do a second one just on ethics, and I'm going to emphasize much more just on that topic. So they ask you to pitch an idea, and of course they may or may not, but if not, they're somewhere else. I continue to write on this topic, so I'm not discouraged. I'm ever encouraged, and I use appreciative inquiry in my approach, trying to find success stories. So the book will be talking about some examples in Canada and the U.S., like the Plant Pure Nation, for example, some of the good work that Nelson Campbell's doing. I'll be talking about his good work. And, there are many examples, your good work. I think it is a growing community, and my prediction is, because I'm doing social change analysis, my prediction is that we could say there were 3% vegans, now we're at 6%. Within the next 10 years or less, we will be 12%, the tipping point, and within 10 years after that, we'll be at 24%. So we will have the mass of the marketplace that will help shift practice. So I think it's very encouraging where we're at. I mean, of course, the illnesses and the slaughter of animals, it is unconscionable every day. It's painful to know of it and believe that it continues. But the more we can raise our numbers together and raise consciousness through love and caring, as you've said, Dr. Tuttle, I think it's a great way to be.
Great. Well said. That's really encouraging that you think that. And I feel the same way. And I just read an article the other day that now in England they've hit 7%, apparently, according to the latest well-done survey. And so, you know, who knows what the actual tipping point is, but my feeling is that you're probably right, probably between 10 and 15% we'll see huge changes. Because one of the sayings I always say is, the more vegans, the more vegans. You know, the more people who go vegan, the more it's just snowballing. You know, there's more restaurants, right. There's more movies, there's more. It's just, you know, when I first went vegan, you know, no one even knew anybody that was vegan. Now, practically anybody I talk to, I say, yeah, you know, I'm a vegan. They say, oh, yeah, I know. It used to be like, I know a colleague who has an uncle whose daughter is vegan or some, you know, far away. But now they say, oh, yeah, my daughter's a vegan. I'm thinking of going vegan, and the people, it's really part of the conversation now much more. And I think, mm-hmm. Like you say, we're on the cusp of a wonderful transformation potentially in our world. And I really appreciate your approach of looking at the positive contributions and changes that are happening and focusing on those and really expressing that there's so many other ways we can contribute to this positivity, because I think that's how a movement grows. It's through people being enthusiastic and excited and happy and creative and supporting each other and cooperating together. And because veganism is not just a critique of an obsolete, devastating, destructive system. We don't just sit and complain and yell and all that. We have a positive contribution to make. I mean, we have plant-based foods that are delicious, nutritious, and that require a fraction of the resources. And we can make them more and more available. And as we do that and show that we're healthy and happy, then I think that's really one of the things that will help more and more influential people like James Cameron make changes. And when that happens, it's easier for us at the grassroots. But the grassroots is still where it's at, I think. You know, getting it out to the people, and the way we're doing, like with this call, the way you're doing with your writing. Now, these are the things, I think, that make our life worthwhile. And I think that's the most important thing we can do in our society right now, is to spread this message creatively like you're doing. So thank you so much, Kathleen. Really great to have you on the call.
Great. Then thank you, Will. And I'm going to sign off because I'm in Nova Scotia and I have to get up early tomorrow. So
Right. That's right. It's 9, so almost 10 o'clock.
On the East Coast.
Okay.
Right. It's 11 almost here, yeah.
Oh, almost 11. Oh, you're far. You're beyond the East. You're in the Atlantic time zone. Oh, goodness.
That's right.
Okay. Bless you. Thanks so much for contributing. Yeah,
and thank you for your leadership.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Thanks. All right. Wow. Well, actually, I mean, we do have one other person. Our good friend Nancy has raised her hand, so I'm going to go ahead and unmute you. Nancy, are you there?
Hi. Yes, I am. Hi.
You're in Washington, D.C., I think, that area?
Near Baltimore? Yeah, I'm in Baltimore, yeah.
Baltimore, right.
Yeah, I'm so glad I made it to your call again. I saw your second email, and I was like, yes, I've got to make it tonight. I have a few things. I'll try to go as quickly as I can because I know it's getting late.
Okay.
I've gone through a lot of, like, how to do this, not call an animal it. And
yes.
I really try to be very cognizant of that. But sometimes it seems, like, impossible to avoid the word it. It just depends on the context, but I really do try, or like you said, use the word they, you know. But
yeah.
What I found is that it's all possible to give the animal a name. Like a raccoon came to my back door, and my cats were all like, whoa, look at raccoons. And so I named the raccoon Rocky. So
right.
When I tell people, And the other thing about naming them, even if it's just a name you give them, it really gives them that personhood too.
Yeah.
So that's something I just wanted to share. And sometimes I just find, you know, quite often we don't have to always, you know, but I just found that there are some sentences or some circumstances where this doesn't fit anywhere.
Okay.
But anyway,
yeah.
But I think it's really good to be cognizant of that. And I think it's a great way of advocacy too. And, you know, I do feel like being vegan has been a massive awakening and just rocked my whole world and thinking about things that I never thought before and like opened the floodgates of understanding. And I feel that these things that like they come through us and I feel like they're just such universal gifts, you know?
Right.
But the weird, I just did a little talk last night for just a small group of people and there's two women there and I've heard this said not by a lot of people, but some people say, you know, well, I can't be vegan because I eat vegetables or plant foods make me sick or, you know, I tried and tried and tried. It just didn't work. And I'm thinking, I'm not quite believing that they really did it right, you know?
Right.
But I also felt like I couldn't just stand there and say, oh, I think you're full of it. Like, I have to acknowledge with their truth. I have to be able to stand there with them and say, you know, I believe you and I'm sorry that you had that happen. But what I wove into it later was something I said, and I feel really strong that these things are it, like there's a big cultural bias, like some men, you know, feel like, you know, real men eat meat.
right.
And that's
right.
A huge cultural bias to get by. And so I think that a lot of men, just like, what is it, like 70% of all vegans are women, you know, I think that a lot of men feel that way and they just, it's a psychological thing. It's like, I don't want to eat vegetables, you know. But mm-hmm. this other woman, she said she did vegan. She did it for maybe a number of years, and then she had to go back to eating meat. I said, are you sure you did it right? Did you have legumes? And she goes, yeah, I had all. And I felt like saying, you know, it's possible that eating animal products, and I didn't say this, but I think that it would be an interesting something to research how animal products damage our bodies, maybe making it hard to eat plant foods. And it's possible
right.
that our system can lose the ability to process them correctly because they've been so damaged from animal products. You know, so
I also feel like
one more quick thing. Feel like now I'm like doing positive things and educating people. I'm kind of shying away from doing protests and showing all the horrors all the time because it brings me down and I just feel like it hurts so much to see people's reactions. So many people just walk by or make insensitive comments. And rather than being complaining, you know, I feel like I've got this business, Botanic Cuisine, to help restaurants incorporate more plant-based options and I'm doing speaking. More, mm-hmm. I spoke at the Veggie Pride Parade in New York, and it really felt wonderful. And I mentioned you and your book, too.
Oh, great.
And,
that's wonderful.
And, yeah, and that feels so much better to me. It feels good. Like, I feel like I really need that. Like, I know I'm helping people to move forward in a positive direction instead of saying, you know, stop eating animals. This is wrong. Look at all these horrors. And it's important to know the horrors, but I feel like it's better to shine that light in the right direction to go.
Right.
People know that the animals are, people know that it's bad, you know?
Right.
So anyway, I think I've overextended. You're welcome.
Well, thanks.
I'll
address a couple of those things, but for everybody. Thank you so much, Nancy. Great to hear your voice, and congratulations. I'm so glad to hear that you spoke at the Veggie Pride Parade in New York recently.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. All right. Take care. Much love. Talk to you later.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. Bye. So that's an interesting thing. I would say, you know, when she said about the person, because this comes up from time to time, you know, someone says, oh, I tried being vegan or, you know, some kind of, that, you know, that health issue, like it didn't work for me or my doctor says that it won't work for me or, I can't go vegan because I can't eat soy. I can't go vegan because I can't eat any beans, any vegetables, or any nuts or seeds. Or, you know, people have all these things in their that they've been told, or maybe whether it's true or not, it's hard to say. But the I think, and then the question, is it really true? I mean, are there people who really cannot go vegan? And I've asked that question of a number of vegan MDs, and virtually all of them who are in the business, in a sense, I mean, of seeing patients and having a clinical practice and seeing, you know, hundreds of people and advising them on their diets over, like John McDougall and a lot of other doctors, Michael Clapper and others, Michael Greyer, but he's not so much clinical, but people that are, you know, seeing patients, typically will affirm what I think, which is that basically, or literally everyone, we all have the same basic physiology. It's designed for plants. I mean, there's no one who has a different physiology. There's no human being who has a short, smooth digestive tract, right? I mean, we all have, you know, our intestine, if we spread it out, it's larger than, the area is vast. It's larger than a tennis court because it's very long and it has lots of little pockets and breathing meat. And especially dairy products are certainly not designed for dairy products. I mean, no one can argue that in a million years because we're not calves. We don't have rennet. But we just don't have a physiology. We don't have the pH in our stomachs. We don't have the substitute. We're just not carnivores. So, but like Michael Clapper, he's written, I think, and spoken more about this specifically than anybody else. And he says that he has run across people who were so abused by their upbringing, where they were, from the time they were just little kids, they were going to McDonald's with their parents, and they were eating a lot of meat and dairy and eggs from just, you know, right out of the womb, basically. And that their system just makes such a radical shift over to somehow deal with this assault of animal foods. I mean, we all get this assault. We all do. So we have to learn. Our bodies have to accommodate, and you know, if our mothers and fathers were sticking cigarettes in our mouth and having us breathe cigarette smoke and smoke cigarettes from the time we were 1.5 years old or whatever, you know, we'd probably be figure out how to deal with that too. I mean, it would make us sick, but we would definitely not want to stop. It's very addictive, and cheese and meat are actually addictive, especially cheese. So I think. What he says is that there are people who, when he puts them on immediately on a strictly plant-based diet, that they don't do well. They need to kind of get onto it a little more gradually. They need to kind of, you know, they need to just, the body needs to figure out how to do this. Other people, you go cold tofu, as they say, and just go from eating meat and dairy straight to vegan from one day to the next, and their body's just like, oh, this is great, no problem. But I think most people do it somewhat gradually. I mean, that's just the way we are as human beings, social creatures that we are. Very often we will give up meat, say we'll give up red meat, then give up maybe chicken, then maybe give up fish, then maybe give up eggs, then maybe give up dairy, you know. So, you know, over a period of a few months or a few years, so our body does is able to handle that change. And, digestive enzymes need to be, you know, started up again. We have to get a whole new microbiome. I mean, we got to think about the microbiome. This is the big thing the last, 8 or 10 years, is the microbiome and how, you know, everybody has we have literally trillions of cells that are not our cells. They're bacteria. They're living inside of us. If all the bacteria died, you know, we would die. They're the ones that actually digest all the food. So, if we're eating meat and dairy products from time of little kids, we have a microbiome that's adapted over the, you know, community, basically, of organisms living inside of us. That is now adapted to eat, to dealing with flesh, and it's fascinating. I mean, it's very important to understand all this, I think, and realize that the microbiome in vegans is very different than the microbiome in people eating a standard American diet, and that's one of the reasons, actually, now scientists are thinking in their research on this whole thing, that why vegans generally tend to be happier is just that there's definitely a big connection between the microbiome, the community of bacteria basically living in our intestines and in our digestive system, and our brain, mind, and attitudes, and that there's a a strong link there. And this is actually goes back to ancient Buddhist times in the sense of energy more, that the energy in the hara and the energy in the heart and the head, these are the three tangents that they're very much connected. But I think, just to be aware that people are going to, maybe take some adjusting of their microbiome before they feel the full benefits, as their digestive system switches over, to feel the full benefits both physically and psychologically and emotionally and then, of course, spiritually, moving to a plant-based diet, it may take a little while. And the thing is, of course, and I write about this a lot in the World Peace Diet, the fact that when we're cleansing and fruits and vegetables are natural cleansers, we usually feel worse. A lot of people will feel worse just because they're cleaning out a lot of toxins that start coming out, or they're also, and then there's deep psychological placebo effects that are at play where, for myself, I was a little kid, from the time I was a little kid, I thought I had to eat meat and dairy to be healthy and strong and all that. And so we have to consciously work with our programming because we can convince ourselves that we don't feel so good. A lot of people don't eat a healthy vegan diet. They think they're not getting enough protein. They're eating huge amounts of peanut butter or nuts or whatever. Most people don't know that we should be basing our vegan way of eating primarily on starches, grains and potatoes and sweet potatoes and so forth, pasta, and with vegetables and fruits and nuts and seeds and legumes, but that really it's really we need carbohydrates to get energy, because food is mainly for energy. And so there's a lot of misinformation just in the, people are afraid of carbohydrates. So anyway, all of that means to say what people say to me that they tried being a vegan, it didn't work that well. I'm very aware that this is a minefield, that they're self-reporting if they didn't do that well. And also lurking in the background is the basic thing that they, it's much easier for them, subconsciously probably, or even consciously, for them not to be vegan in their life. Maybe their colleagues, their family, their friends, they're not vegan. So they're just hoping subconsciously for some kind of an excuse to go back and be part of a tribe again, because when we're vegans, we maybe lose our tribe. And that's a hard thing for most people to feel that they're losing their friends and family over this. So, it would be so great to eat a little chicken again. Okay, now I can be with everybody and go to the church, chicken barbecue, and just be like everybody else again, not be different. People are so afraid to be different. And we take so many cultural cues from other people, and meals are the most powerful way that we bond with each other. So all those things enter in when someone's saying this. And the thing is, if someone says, "Well, I tried being a vegan and it didn't work for me," that's bulletproof. People know that. If they say, "Well, I'm a Christian, I don't want to do it," or I'm afraid that my partner won't like me, or I think the plants have feelings, or whatever. People can argue with that. But if someone says, "I tried it and it didn't work for me," I mean, what's anybody going to say? You can't say anything. You're like, okay, you tried it. I guess you're one of those people that's really, a bobcat in a human life or a human body. I mean, you're different, right? You need to eat meat. But I think, so for us, the question is, what do we do then in that situation? And I think, essentially, the best thing is to just listen to them and not try to change them, not try to make them wrong and that kind of thing. And then you just try to use I statements. I think that essentially, I understand what you're saying, and I've had some experience with that myself. I understand what you mean, because I know that, for myself, I realized that vegan nutrition is relatively straightforward and simple, but there's so many misconceptions. And I was eating too much protein when I started. I didn't feel that well. I had to learn to make sure I was getting plenty of calories, plenty of starch and complex carbohydrates in my diet, and not eat processed foods. And I had to work also with my mind and with the program that I had in my mind about that I'm not going to be strong and healthy if I eat plant-based meals and so forth, and plant seeds along those lines, so the person isn't just fighting with you internally, and that you understand them, and then say what you've experienced, and then let go with a smile and being loving and respectful. And then just continue. You know, if it depends on the situation, but if you have other possibilities to perhaps share a link with some nutritional information that might be helpful. But just the example of healthy vegan people and questioning, I think just questioning this idea that some people need this. If the problem is a lot of, even vegans, unfortunately, even vegan, like people, well, I won't name names, but you know, there's a lot of vegan doctors that have their line of supplements, and they have their line of superfoods, and they have their line of foods you need to have if you're going to be a healthy vegan. And so, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that are not vegans and a lot of people that are vegans that are constantly repeating this idea that everyone is unique. You know, everybody's unique. And we all have, you know, our food, our nutritional requirements are all unique. And, of course, it's true we're all unique. I know we're all unique. Yeah, we're all unique. Okay, so what? But we don't, you know, elephants don't grow up saying they're all unique and some eat this and some eat that. You know, I mean, there's basic food that we eat. And, you know, so we're human beings. We have the basic same metabolism, you know, this idea of a blood type diet or whatever it is. You know, the people try to make up some kind of a system to justify eating foods that they want to eat or that they've been programmed to want to eat. And so I think really just questioning that basic idea that we humans are all have a unique digestive system. Actually, we have the same basic digestive system, and that's a great gift. So that's one of the things I always say is I'm so glad I discovered that, you know, all of us have been given this wonderful gift of the human body that doesn't require any animal to suffer to get all the nutrients that we need to thrive and be healthy. And then I always try to follow that up with this idea that, however, all of us have been born into a culture, you know, say, you know, I realize, use I statements, and then I realized, of course, that, gosh, I myself and everyone, you know, was born into a culture where I was forced to refuse this gift and eat animal foods, and now I'm not doing it anymore, and it's great, you know. But that idea that we have been given a wonderful gift of a body that doesn't require any animal to suffer, and to talk about that. The other thing that I found that has been effective, if someone says that they tried being a vegan that didn't work for them, that they needed some animal protein, and especially if they do it with a, like the doctor said or something like that. So I thought I'd have, you know, a little chicken, and I sometimes I'd say, well, I understand that you felt like you needed to, have some animal food because you thought you were missing some nutrients, and the doctor said you needed, or you felt, you know, your research, you needed to have some fish or some chicken. But if the doctor said or the research said you need to eat a little bit of dog meat or a little bit of horse meat or a little bit of, you know, something like that, you probably get a second opinion, right? And just, you know, kind of raise that question of why are we so willing to eat the flesh of some animals and not others, and to plant a seed, I think that way is also helpful. And so anyway, so that, I think, addresses that. I think it's a really important thing, and it comes up quite a bit. It's sort of the excuse of last resort for a lot of people to say, I tried and it didn't work. And, of course, a lot of people never really did try. They say they tried. I mean, like Lee Ortiz, she talks about how she was a vegan for all these years, and she wrote this book, The Vegetarian Myth. But, you know, she's very clear. She never even tried being a vegan. She never was a vegan. And she blames veganism for all of her physical problems, but she was always eating eggs along the way and so forth. So it's important, I think, to realize that when people say they try being a vegan, you know, I would definitely take that with a grain of salt. And maybe you could maybe ask them, in a respectful way, what was their typical, what were they eating exactly every day, and if they want to get into it. And you can help them nutritionally. It depends on your relationship with them, I think. But I think it's the grassroots movement, though. The more we can talk with people and show them an example of ourselves and the fact that there are millions of people thriving as vegans and it's growing all the time, is very important too. All right. So, thank you so much. And, let me see. I was thinking it would be nice to do a couple things. I was going to ask, if she's here, Lily, to press *6 and say a few words. You know, Lily Macy is our World Peace Diet Sunday leader, And she's been having some trouble with her phone, so I'm not totally sure if she's on the call actually or not. If she is, go ahead and press star 6, Lily, if you can. And then otherwise, I really have a few things I wanted to cover before we all go on to the next thing in our lives. I think it's really, there are quite a few things I want to mention. Okay, so Lily has just, I think, raised her hand. That's great. I'll just say today is April 19th, which is a big deal. Where I grew up in Concord, Massachusetts, April 19th is Patriots Day. It's the day we celebrate. Every April 19th, we celebrate. Remember the poem by Ralph Waldo Emerson? Who how's it go? about the shot, fired the shot heard round the world. And so that was in Concord, Massachusetts, where I grew up. And on April 19th, that was when we went down. We would hike all the way there. We would walk. There'd be this huge, probably 1,000 people would all walk together 6 miles to Concord, to the Old North Bridge. And then we would reenact the battle of that began the Revolutionary War. And some people are all dressed up, some as redcoats like the British, and some as colonial farmers with their muskets. My father, on April 19th, would take his gun off the wall and march over and reenact the battle and shoot the redcoats and send them back to Boston and celebrate the revolution. I always like it because it's like a, if you have a situation that's really intolerable, you should have a revolution, change it. Or just sit around doing some ridiculous thing and giving all our power away. And I think veganism is a revolution, although it's more of an evolution. And I think it's not a revolution of violence. It's an evolution of love and awareness. But it is a change, and we need to be able to make a change in our lives. And so this is the day, April 19th, Patriots Day, where we celebrate the birth of this experiment that we're seeing here that we call the United States. And I know there's a lot of terrible things we've done beyond enumeration, so I'm not particularly proud of being an American necessarily, but I did come over, my forefathers and mothers, on the very first ships on the Mayflower in 1620 and on the Planter in 1635, so I kind of have this feeling of being, Puritan pilgrim from the very beginning. And it's devastating, really, what these people did to the Indian, the native population, to the earth, and so forth. But there wasn't an aspect of trying to have freedom of thought and so forth. So I think there's some pure seeds in there somewhere. But the problem, of course, is they didn't just come by themselves. They brought all their pigs and cows and chickens, and they brought this what the American Indians called their slave animals with them. And brought this whole way of dominating nature and women and ecosystems that we have all inherited. So now it's time, really, to have the benevolent revolution of veganism. And I think there's no greater gift we can give to the world than to make this effort. So this is a new Patriots Day, maybe a day where we liberate animals. And April 19th can be the day of liberating animals would be, I think, a new way to celebrate this. It should be a vegan holiday. All right, so there's more things, but I'm going to turn it over to Lily for a few minutes, and then I know it's running late. It's already 7:10 here in California. So, but I would love to hear a few words from Lily because I'll let her talk. She'll let you know what's going on with the Raw Peace Diet Sunday. Lily, hello.
Yes. Hello, Will. I'm glad you figured out I was on the call.
Yeah,
I think I've only missed it. You've had this call 5 years or so, at least?
At least, yeah. I think even longer.
Before I started World Peace Diet Sunday, but I've been on this call. I've only missed it maybe twice, two or three times in the last
year
since you started.
I do.
So any chance to be with you, Will, is such an opportunity. It's such a great opportunity. The greatest opportunity of my life. But you talked about so many things tonight that my head is swimming. I just have to address something. You talked about, talking to people about their diet and then all, the way people eat and that we're not all different, that we actually have a similar physiology.
Right.
And 30 years ago, one of the people who started coming to the World Peace Diet Sunday, which has been going on 4.5 years now, every Sunday I've been having a conference call to read the World Peace Diet, and I'm sure some of the people on this call have been on it. Eric Weisman, who created Evolution Diet 30, and you talked about evolution, Evolution Diet 30 years ago, comes to this call every week and gives us another way to approach our veganism with our pets, because even though we look at the canines and we look at the kind of teeth our animals have, they obviously have carnivorous teeth, but with the right kind of nutrition, they have evolved. And I'm here to tell you that I have 2 vegan dogs and 5 vegan cats. My dogs are 11 and 12 years old, 11 and a half and 12. I've been vegan 11 and a half years since I read the World Peace Diet just by accident, and it made me a dyed-in-the-wool vegan. And my animals, I live in a vegan household. My husband is a vegan. All of my animals have been eating Evolution Diet now for almost 12 years.
Wow.
They have been vegan as long as I have, and they're thriving. My dogs are like puppies. They still play ball. They do not have the problems that most animals have on that standard diet. And if anyone wants to come to World Peace Diet Sunday, which I wish you all would, because it's a wonderful interactive group, Eric explains. Eric has been in the pet food business now 30 years, and he explains how the vegan food it's formulated in such a way that it meets all the requirements that the animals need. And my animals are in gorgeous shape. And even my vet knows they've been vegan for years, and he's not a vet. But whenever I take them for anything, I remind him, you know, my animals are vegan. And he says, yeah, and they're in great shape. I love it. I want to invite people. I've been doing World Peace Diet Sunday out of a need. I wanted to have the World Peace Diet in my frame of reference every single day. I wanted, because this is the book that changed my life and my husband's life forever. I mean, we were not planning to become vegan. I didn't even think I was going to become vegan. It wasn't on the game plan, but this was a game changer, this book. So for me, the book touches on every point. It's like reading the vegan Bible. It is. Many people have called it the vegan Bible. And to read it on a daily basis keeps all the reasons in fresh, all the reasons fresh for why you're a vegan. It will make you a better vegan activist. And it's not necessarily that you're going to be in people's faces about it. You can pick and choose what you want to focus on. Focusing on the great lifestyle change is a wonderful thing to focus on. People want to change their lifestyles. So the positive approach is, of course, the best approach to use with people. And I don't think I've ever talked to anyone about veganism where they have, well, a couple of times they said, don't tell me, I don't want to hear it, and that's because they don't want to hear it because they already know. So I just, you know, I back off. But the way I do my activism is I refer them to worldpeacediet.com, and then I also tell them about this study group that I formulated 4.5 years ago because I was a lonely vegan, and I wanted to have a weekly call. So I've been doing this 4.5 years. Next week, this coming week, Will Tuttle will be celebrating Earth Day with us on the call. He comes, and Madeline comes from time to time. They both come, and it's just so wonderful, and the people appreciate it so much, and they love it. And it's a great way to plug people in, and it's low-key. It's not a kind of thing where people are ranting and raving and making other people wrong, you know. Because I was at one point was not a vegan at all, and I have to always remember that. So it's a way of keeping the World Peace Diet fresh. And I read lots of other books prior to the World Peace Diet. The World Peace Diet is the book that was the game changer. Even Diet for a New America didn't do it for me. There's something about the World Peace Diet that it just resonates, and he has opened up every avenue of why we need to be vegan as a people, as a human species. So that's why I started it. But having said that, I'm going to take a break. I've decided I need a break. I need to do some other things, and which doesn't mean I'm leaving the World Peace Diet alone at all. I'm going to keep that will always be. I listen to Will reading the World Peace Diet every day so that I keep it fresh in my mind. And but I'm going to take a break, but then I'll come back. And I want to let you know that I'm going to be doing that and to be thinking about please joining this interactive group with people that you want to plug into the vegan message, because all I do there is I read it and I make some commentary and then I open it up to discussion. And it takes about a year to read it. So we've read it 4 times now in the last 4.5 years. And I did take a little break last time. And I've read the book 8 times in my life. My husband and I were reading it. My husband and I were reading it before dinner every night for the first 4 years. And I said, you know, I need to do this. I need to do this. This is the only way I can be an activist, being way out here. And I can tell you that if you are a vegan and you're just quiet and a quiet vegan, you're going to become an angry vegan. Activism helps you. Activism, and I am also an angry vegan at times. I go back and forth. I get very angry and graphic, just with very close friends. I don't do it in public. But I just get so angry at some of the stupidity I hear that I have people that I can let some steam off with. And very close friends, and they're very devout vegans because of the World Peace Diet. So I just want you to know that I've been doing this. Was there any other point you wanted me to
just to let people know, we're going to be this Sunday, I'll be on the call, maybe Madeline too, and then you'll go 2 more Sundays probably after that. You're in chapter 15, so at the very end of the book.
I'm in chapter 15, yeah. Living the Revolution. Very powerful. The interesting thing about the World Peace Diet is that it's just like Will read a quotation from it. You can't open that book without getting hit hard, and yet he plays hardball with you, and yet there's a soft spiritual touch to it. So it's not just the atrocities, it's everything. And you're all here because you're either World Peace Diet facilitator taking the training or whatever, but you know the World Peace Diet. But I'm telling you something, you can't know it enough. It's not like, oh, I just read it once, I already know that, let's move on. It isn't that kind of book. It's like, I don't want to get religious on people, but it's like when people read the Bible, they have Bible studies, and that's been going on for, centuries. They've had Bible studies, right? And they don't say, okay, I've already read the Bible, let's move on. This is not that kind of book. It's not just another book on why to be vegan, because I read many books after I read the World Peace Diet and quite a few before. And it's not in the same league. The World Peace Diet really, really, truly is the Bible of veganism. And not, even though it's 12 and a half, how many years old? I mean, I'm 11 and a half year old vegan, and it was out a year, right, prior to?
Yeah, it's been about 12 years now, yes.
Right, so I was fortunate enough to hear Will's voice in kind of a beautiful, synchronistic and psychic thing where I heard his voice. I didn't even know what he was talking about, but I knew, and my husband, I wasn't sure. Now that I listen to that tape, I say, "Oh, he was talking about the journey of transformation. That's what he was talking about, and he was talking about chapter 14." But I wasn't sure. But I knew I had to order the book. Something told me, my intuitive nature told me, I have to order the book. And I just want people to know that if you've read the World Peace Diet, once or even twice, just read a little bit every day, because I've been preaching this now for years. Do that. And it will keep it fresh why you're really a vegan. It'll keep it in the forefront. And why we're a vegan is the most important reason in the world. This planet is horrible because of what people do to the animals.
Right.
And
right.
I want to say one thing. I think it is terribly cruel what's happening here. And I happen to come from a family that survived the Holocaust. And I want you to know that I do not consider what Hitler and his henchmen did to be abuse. I consider it abject cruelty what they did and the way the people were raised to go into the gas chamber. And I completely identify with the animals raised to go to slaughter, because my own parents survived this by a miracle. They survived it, but their parents did not. And they were in their 40s when they were murdered by the Nazis during the Holocaust. And I do not consider what the Nazis did to be abuse. I consider it abject cruelty. And anyone working in a factory farm or slaughtering animals, and I said this on the World Peace Diet Sunday last week, when if I were beating a dog in the street with a pipe, you would say, you're being cruel to that animal, stop doing that, you're killing that animal. But that's exactly what's done in the blood pit every single day to get the bacon and the ham that people eat. So to me, that anybody that does that is being cruel to the max. So I don't like to differ with my master and my teacher, and I wouldn't have been a vegan without him. But what this is the most cruel thing that is going on here on this planet now, and it's speeded up. They've even made the factory farms and the slaughterhouses, even they've even speeded it up, and you know, in terms of killing them, so they don't even worry about it. If that's not cruelty, then what is? So yes. maybe you can discuss that next time. But I can't
time.
Help it. I don't go into other people's faces, but we're family mm-hmm. here. I don't
right.
not go to a non-vegan and say, you're involved in a cruel system. Or sometimes I do. It is such a cruel system, and I take it personally. So
right,
that's about,
right.
is there anything else you wanted? I know I said more than
no.
you probably wanted me to say, but that's,
no,
that's what's on my heart.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted people to hear about the what you're doing with the World Peace Diet Sunday, taking a little break and then coming back whenever you feel it's right. And thanks also for mentioning, which I think really helpful, take time to read, to continue reading the book. And I've met quite a few people over the years who have read the World Peace Diet multiple times or listened to it on the audiobook version, and I always hear the same thing. They say, gosh, you know, it gets better each time. And when you were saying that, there was, like when you read it one or two times, you realized later that you missed a lot of it because when you read it the third or fourth or fifth time, you got more out of it than you had missed earlier. And I think that those are just helpful points for people to be aware of, that it's an ongoing learning, and the book actually was designed to have, it's very dense, it has multiple layers of meaning, so it's hard to get it in just one reading, essentially. So I think it's important to emphasize that point. So thanks.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah.
It has multiple layers, and it resonates, and it's life-changing. It's
mm-hmm.
utterly life-changing. The book has a life of its own, really, when you put it out there with your soul, and it was a love letter to humanity, and I take it as that, and I'm so grateful for it. That
yeah,
words cannot express how much this
right.
book means to me. I've dedicated my life to it, to the message of the World Peace Diet.
Yeah.
You know, and I,
wow.
by the way, I love the first speaker who came on, the doctor who the
oh, Kathleen,
professor
Dr.
came.
Kathleen,
who
yeah.
Kathleen, thank you. If you went to bed, but thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah.
Bless you for infiltrating these places that just are so heartless,
right.
and you came that you're there with heart. So thank you for
right.
that. And I'm a
right.
passionate person, and I'm passionately in love with the World Peace Diet more than ever. I mean, I'm so grateful for it that it every day is like a new beginning of a passionate relationship with my own life. And
mm-hmm.
what you said, there's just very few years that we have on this planet. Why not live them with great passion and great love?
Right.
And that's
right.
what the World Peace Diet offers anyone who will read it. So
mm-hmm.
that's why I keep doing this.
Thanks, Lily, so much. That's beautiful words. I appreciate it. And I think with that, we're going to have to pretty much sign off here. Thanks again. We'll talk later. Thanks, Lily. really appreciate your efforts.
Thank you, Will.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so, that's, I think, a really important point that our lives are very brief, and to live with a sense of passion, a sense of purpose, to do our best in the face of insurmountable odds. I used to love that song, The Impossible Dream, and Man of La Mancha. It's my favorite, I think. And it speaks to the underlying idea that we all have a mission for this lifetime to just do our best. And I think as we do our best, we encourage each other to do our best. So much love to all of you. So we just have a couple more minutes here, and I want to just draw your attention briefly to the resources for this month, April 2018, for the World Peace Diet Circle. I love the quote at the beginning from Shakespeare in the 12th night. He is a heavy eater of beef. Methinks it does harm to his wit. So even 500 years ago, people were talking about how eating meat does harm to one's wit. You'll notice in the beginning here, there are many, I've been really busy lately. There's a video I did, Should Spiritual Teachers Be Vegan, which has been making currently a huge impact on all over the internet. I've been hearing people loving it and hating it. I make a pretty strong statement that any spiritual teacher really has to be vegan if they want to set themselves up as a spiritual teacher. So please watch that and share it, and both on Facebook and on YouTube. And there's my plant-based Think Plant-Based podcast, the video documentary Hope, What You Eat Matters, done by an Austrian filmmaker who interviewed me actually three times here in the United States and also in Switzerland. And that's an excellent film, really. It was just released now in English. It was originally released in German. Also, the Vegan Spirituality, with Lisa Levinson and Judy Carman, I was on recently. You can watch that. I was on SOS Radio in Grass Valley. You can listen to that. I was on Time to Wake Up with Steve Prusak, a video. You can watch that. There's another one. I did The Essence of Deep Veganism, a video. You can watch that. It's really been a busy month. And then an essay that I wrote called Veganism, Our Journey, Not Our Destination. You can read that. My presentation at the University of Michigan Veg Week a few weeks ago. You can watch that video. So those are all resources that are available on those links. And then also there's a whole lot of articles that I think are important to be aware of. There's really a lot of them. Things are just speeding up. It's amazing. I mean, look at this. The Guardian in London, England, has a major feature essay article. The title of it, I mean, just look at the title, the headline, The Unstoppable Rise of Veganism, How a Fringe Movement Went Mainstream. I mean, that's the headline, The Unstoppable Rise of Veganism. Unstoppable, The Unstoppable Rise of Veganism. I mean, that's in a mainstream newspaper, How a Fringe Movement Went Mainstream. And it talks a lot, actually, about some people we know, like Kip Anderson, who created the Cowspiracy and of the Health. He's a World Peace Diet facilitator. It's wonderful to see how veganism is now being recognized to be an unstoppable force. It is an unstoppable force. That's really why I wrote the World Peace Diet, was to emphasize that point, that it's our true nature. Our true nature is unstoppable. I wrote how you can try to hold a ball underwater, but at a certain point, it's just going to come up. And that's what we're doing. We're eating animal foods. We're holding this ball down. We're holding our intelligence down. We're holding our empathy down, and they want to come up. So anyway, there's a great video with Daniel Redwood, our good friend Daniel Redwood, Cesar Chavez, Respect for All. Beautiful video. Highly recommended. With some of his music, beautiful music is on there. And Beth, I don't think Beth is on, but Beth's a wonderful graphic artist, designer, helped us on our new, we just released a new book. It's World Peace, My Piano Music, 15 pieces of sheet music, and along with 25 of Madeline's paintings. Came out really well. We have two new things that just came this week. One is a new book, which it's called Bursting Light, and the subtitle is Favorite Original Piano Solos by Will Tuttle with Visionary Paintings by Madeline Tuttle. That came out this week, and you can, I guess, you can't order it yet. Well, yeah, you can order it, I think, on the website. And then also, it just came today, like an hour ago, 2 hours ago, a new CD we just did called Reflections, Original Piano and Flute Voyage with Will and Madeline. So if you want some really original meditative piano and flute music, we have a new CD called Reflections that just came out too. So there's two things in one day. That's pretty exciting. And we worked for many months up until these releases of these, or years really, in the case of the music. People have been asking me for years for sheet music of my music. So finally we've got 15 pieces of sheet music so you can play it yourself if you can read music. But anyway, so that's that video. And then there's a bunch of other very interesting, very, very interesting articles. Tel Aviv, the vegan capital of the world, AMA Resolution 406, encourage plant-based meals in hospitals and ban processed meats. And these are big things. Cows in New Hampshire. also, there's a very interesting, the Senate just approved over $1 billion for the dairy industry, which is just basically going down the tubes. The dairy industry has been pouring something like 25 million gallons of milk out onto the field, just throwing it away. I mean, think of the horror of all these cows giving their lives for this milk, millions of cows giving their lives for this milk. Then they just throw it away, pour it onto the fields, and throw it away, dump it, because they want to decrease the supply so the price will go up. I mean, this is the insanity of the dairy industry right now. And it's so great because people are not buying it. And the idiotic policies are to give them even more money to make people even more sick. The pharmaceutical industry, I'm sure, is behind a little, most of this stuff. Anyway, there's a lot of other great things. The Questions We Ever Ask, another vegan video that just came out. Some bad news, like animal populations are set to plummet by 67%. By 2020, so we must see the impact of animal agriculture. There's many more articles here. I won't go through all of them all, but the LA Times, big headline, by going vegan, we can feed millions more people. And these are the kinds of things that people, you know, this is in the mainstream media, we're learning, we're changing, and we're growing. Saudi Prince opening a vegan marine park and restaurants in Saudi Arabia. I mean, this is a worldwide movement. There's tremendous changes happening. All the time. So, Roy Rosenberg of Happy Hen Sanctuary attempts to rescue a pig at Cal Poly. You remember a few months ago when Madeline and I went to Cal Poly and I told you about how at that one building where they slaughter animals, they teach the students how to slaughter animals. We actually went to Zoe Rosenberg's sanctuary and did a video there. And now it turns out a few days ago, she and her mother went there and tried to rescue a pig. It's the same pig that they kill one every Tuesday to teach how to do it. And they didn't arrest her, but they told her she had to leave. And they have a sanctuary they were going to. But it got great press. You know, it's just so beautiful to see people standing up and doing something and making a statement. So Little Tyke, the true story of a vegetarian lioness. Check that out. That's an interesting story. Even a lion. But anyway, so... those are the that's some of the information that we have on the resources. They kind of keep you busy. I know it keeps me busy anyway. And it's always good, as Lily said, and I think we all know, we can always learn more. We can always become more informed. And but the most important thing, is, I think, as we've been saying here this evening, is to work on our inner understanding. So next month, we will be gathering again here. I want to thank everyone for participating, and Madeline and I send you our love. I did check when Lily asked when we started the World Peace Diet Circle, and it's just so happened, now that I just checked, that next month in May will be our anniversary. It'll be our 7th anniversary, 7 years. We started in the very first one was May of 2011, and we have not missed one. I don't think, well, maybe we missed one. Yes, yeah, maybe we have missed one or two. But basically, we've barely missed any over these years. I think the last, we maybe missed one because we were traveling recently around the world. But essentially, we've been doing it for 7 years, and I want to thank all of you. So in May, next third Thursday of May 2018 is May 17th. So we'll be gathering again on May 17th. We've got quite a few things happening. Like I said, we just did a whole tour to Southern California. We'll be speaking at UC Davis, which is a big ag school, on Monday, in San Francisco on the following Sunday, and then here in Napa on the following Sunday, May 16th. And we just spoke at a community college here in Silver Lake the other day, yesterday actually. So this year, you can always see where we're going to be on our tour schedule on our website. And I'll just close with reading an excerpt. I think it's always good maybe just to read something from the World Peace Diet. So this is an excerpt from the World Peace Diet, and this is it. This will be our closing, and then we'll have some music. Looking deeply into food, into what and how we eat, and into the attitudes, actions, and beliefs surrounding food is an adventure of looking into the very heart of our culture and ourselves. As surprising as it may seem, as we shine the light of awareness onto this most ordinary and necessary aspect of our lives, we shine light onto unperceived chains of bondage attached to our bodies, minds, and hearts, and onto a sparkling path that leads to transformation and the possibility of true love, freedom, and joy in our lives. So much love to all of you. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll close here with the calf song, in memory of all the little calves who are stolen for dairy products. Much love to you all, and look forward to seeing you in May.